All right, so I'm sitting here with Ron Lawler, and he's going to tell us a bit about a research project that he recently did. So Ron, if you can tell us your title and your affiliation and a little bit about who you are.
Well, I'm a paramedic, National Registered Paramedic with an AAS degree, and I'm the Paramedic Program Coordinator for the FM Ambulance Service and North Dakota State College of Science Paramedic Program.
Wonderful. And now this project that you did, you were working with a team. Can you tell us a little bit about who else was involved?
Lots of people, actually. We had Kyle Chambers from down south, Peggy Sheffer from the east coast, so we had differing views there. Sandy Werwicka and Josh Salzman from here in town, from Health East. Jen Scheffners was our statistician, student at Inver Hills, and then Kate from FISDAP. Plus, of course, all the help from FISDAP with all the data and everything.
Wonderful. So had you ever done research before this particular project?
One previous time. And both these projects came out of the FISDAP Research Summits. So I had done one previously about pediatric urban versus rural calls. So this was the first one where I've been the lead, but I was a co-author of the first one.
And now when did you decide to do research and why did you get interested in it?
I don't know if I can say when. It just kind of creeps up on you like a disease, I think. It's not something you really admit to people right away. I do research. But I think it came out of a desire to learn more about how you come up with these things, about how to read the research, how to be more aware of what it means when you see these things on the piece of paper. You know, what does methods mean? What does hypothesis really mean? You know, and you can read about it, and there's books on how to read research. But until you really do it, you don't understand exactly how things are happening in it. And going through the entire process, the IRB approvals, all the tracking down the data, and then, you know, working with people on what everything actually means, trying to limit it down to one thing, which is pretty much the hardest thing, I think, was just trying to come up with one question when you've got 100 in the back of your head, and then you get five more every time you turn around because, hey, this looks really cool. This data is nice, you know. So all those things, to me, was how to make a better research reader was why I really wanted to do the research.
Interesting. So it sounds like you were really motivated by a desire to learn the process and to get some of your questions answered.
Right. You know, it's hard for me as an instructor to tell students, well, this research means this. We should read this research and do what it says. And they ask questions about it, too, and I can't answer it. Mm-hmm. Well, that's because it says so. You know, I turned into a parent again because I said so.
Now, think back to your first project, maybe. Was there any anxiety or apprehension about doing research that you had?
Well, I think there was in both, actually. In the first one, it was actually probably less because I wasn't the primary author. I knew I wouldn't have to present it if we got anywhere. So it was more fun to kind of sit back and just help out. And, you know, I'm not sure if anxiety is the right word or more just not knowing. You know, what am I doing? I don't know what I'm doing with this. Well, how do I do that? And then listening to the statisticians chat together. And so I don't know what they're talking about. I have no idea what she's saying. What do these p-values mean? You know, so just learning all of that was really interesting to me. The second time when I was the lead, then there's a little more anxiety, a little more apprehension, because if this is good, I might have to talk about it.
Right.
So, you know, then you're conflicted. Do I really make it really good or just okay, you know? But it turned out okay, and I think it was a good project to work on, and I had really good information. So, you know, you get excited about what you found out, and it's something that I wanted to do and information I can use. So that makes it even better for me. It's not just something esoteric that, well, that's nice to know, but it's something that I can use, which I really liked.
Do you have any advice for people who maybe had similar concerns about getting involved in research, who maybe are interested but haven't quite jumped into the pool yet?
Just do it, as Nike would say. You're not going to get any better at it unless you do it. And, you know, it doesn't have to be involved. It doesn't have to be major. It just needs to be something. I mean, even if you're just going to research, you know, a test question for your own multiple choice exams in your own school, just do something like that and come up with a plan for it and do it. That's why I like the Research Summit, because it's a bunch of people that come together and you're not alone in it, and you get some good education and that kind of thing out of it. So it's a nice non-threatening environment to get involved with.
Good. And how did it feel when you realized that your abstract was accepted and was going to be presented at the National Association of EMS Educators?
I was floored, actually. This is really great. I mean, it was when you're in the middle of it, it's like, you know, this is kind of cool and it's just kind of nice information to know. Mm-hmm. You know, and then they tell you that your project is going to be presented in front of your peers, it's like, wow, I guess it was worth more than I thought. And then you get kind of scared about it. You know, at first you're really excited, and then you're like, oh no, I've got to talk now. I've got to get it in front of 400 or 500 of my peers who know what I'm saying now, and talk about it. So a whole gamut of emotions there.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the nitty-gritties. What was the title of your abstract?
It was called The Right Dose, an Examination of a Prescription to Enhance Critical Thinking in Paramedic Students.
And then what was the hypothesis, or what was the objective of the research?
Well, it kind of changed, actually. What we first wanted to do was to find out if trauma versus medical ALS team leads meant anything, if doing more of one than the other would help you to get a better score on the PhysDAP CPE exam. I want to keep calling it OSPE because that's the first one. So if I slip off into that, that's what it means. The computer, the comprehensive paramedic exam, CPE, I usually just call OSPE. So bear with me on that one. But we wanted to really see if there was a difference. And the interesting thing was for us, as we got into the data, there wasn't any trauma ALS leads, and which then when we had like one of those aha moments, yeah, that makes sense because trauma is a BLS problem. Mm-hmm. It's a surgical disease, but it's a BLS EMS problem. So there aren't even enough calls for us to even look at it. So we had to modify it a little bit and just look at whether medical ALS team leads would be a good predictor of success on the critical thinking parts of the CPE exam. And it turned out that it did, which was really good for us.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, you've answered some of my next question, which was to ask a bit about the method. So it sounds like you were using the PhysDAP database, which is a national database that has information about students' internships and then also their exam results. So can you give us more information about your methods and precisely what you ended up looking at?
Yeah, the PhysDAP database was huge for us, too. We didn't even realize how many calls we were going to get. It was over 35,000 calls, which is monstrous to have that many to look at. And that was just the ones with the team leads on them. So there's, you know, many more calls than that in that database. And then we split that up into different categories based on the medical problem the patient was having, just to see if that made a difference as well. Overall, it was very nice. The data was very clean. We didn't have to throw anything out. It was all very nicely done. When we did our analysis, all the magic that the statistician performed, we came up with very low P numbers, which was great. Everything was statistically relevant, which evidently is good. we didn't do all this work for nothing. And what we found out at the end was that what we basically predicted was that it does matter, and it did. When we made a nice plot for it, if you have students that are doing between 10 and 30 ALS team leads, they get about a 70 on the CPE exam, which is below the cut score, but it's okay. But if you want to get the cut score, the 73%, you have to get 45. And then above that is pretty much it plateaus out after that too. So, you know, if you want to be okay, get, you know, 10 to 30. But if you want to do really well on that, get 45 calls or so. After 45, it really plateaus off and you don't get any better scores anyway. But it was really nice to see that it was vindicated that the more ALS team leads you do, the more medical ones you do, which is going to be pretty much most of your ALS team leads anyway, the better you do on the exam. And I think that, you know, just putting my own perspective on it, which doesn't appear in the paper, you have to do more critical thinking on the medical calls to get through that call and get the lead. And so by doing that, by doing more calls, it prepares you to think critically about the test questions that you have to do later, besides just getting all the information from your preceptors on how to do the medical calls. So it worked out really well.
Interesting. That's an interesting conclusion. Did your teammates come to similar conclusions when they were trying to figure out why it was medical calls that were so predictive?
Yeah, we chatted about it quite a bit, and I think we would come up with the same kinds of things. The more you do it, the more you think about it, the better off you get. And the secondary thing that we found out, too, is it mattered what kind of call you went on. Mm-hmm. When we looked at several different kinds of medical call, cardiac was number one and abdominal was number two. If you did those two calls more than any others, you did better. The weird thing to me was respiratory didn't fall in there. So respiratory didn't have enough information in it to say that it was relevant at all. Mm-hmm. But there was more calls. There was more respiratory calls and abdominal calls. But if you did abdominal calls, you got a better score than if you did respiratory calls, which was weird to me that I would think, you know, respiratory would be in there, but it actually wasn't. Not that you can choose the calls to go on, but it was interesting to see that, you know, if you can choose a place to go, someplace that's got more cardiac problems than they have respiratory problems, go to the one that has the more heart attacks.
Good to know. So were there any limitations to your study? Were there?
The only limitations we really had is that PhysDep is self-reported. So you have to rely on the fact that the students are putting in the information correctly. Other than that, everything was pretty much cut and dried. We did delineate which we wanted to have for the different categories and put all the stuff into those self-described categories, but that's not really a limitation, just kind of a categorization thing.
So you touched on this briefly, but how do your research findings, how do you think it could maybe affect the future of EMS education? Are you applying any of this in your curriculum?
We immediately came back and applied it, actually. In the previous year, our students only had to get 20 ALS team leads during the whole time they were in clinicals, in internships. 10 of those being in the final phase, like the real actual internship type phase. Now this year, our new students who love us, because they've talked to the previous students,
sure.
Now have to get 45 ALS team leads, the last 20 of which have to be in the final phase.
So what you're telling me is that they're not raising money to send you to the research summit again.
No, slashing tires next year. And I think we'll see some good results from it too. Mm-hmm. So we weren't as strict about when they could take the CPE exam before. We were, you know, as long as you finished your phase three for us and you're going into the final phase and you'd finished all the didactic, you could take the CPE exam. Now we're delaying that until you're done with the program. It's the last thing you get to do is the CPE exam, which we weren't as rigorous about before. But with this material, it's giving us a little better heads up that maybe we want to wait a little bit to give that exam.
Which is sort of an interesting thing to think about. You know, normally people think about cramming all that cognitive information so that they do well on the exam. But what it sounds like you're saying is that you're making sure students are getting that hands-on critical thinking, patient care experience so that they'll do better on the exam.
Right, yeah. Taking the things that you learn in the classroom and then applying them will help you be a better thinker is not really the conclusion we came up with, but what we're kind of thinking leads to that conclusion. So that if you're actually using it, you're thinking about it more than just reading it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for talking with us today, Ron, and congratulations on having your abstract presented at the National Association of EMS Educators.
Thank you.